Welcome, everyone. I'm Tim Safford, and I serve here at Christ Church, and it's an honor and a privilege to serve with our archivist, Carol, who's here, and with Barbara Hogue, Director of the Trust, and Neil Ronk, who's our and our lead guide, and to welcome you all here this Sunday. I'm going to have Bill Cutler introduce our speaker. I just wanted to extend my warmth of greeting to the Diocese of Pennsylvania and those of us who know that the future is promised to those who remember the past rightly and well. The story of the Doerr family, of which we'll learn more, and here's the Doerr Corner, the monument to Captain William White Doerr. And of course, the good Bishop William White is right here, and Benjamin Doerr and his wife here. As fascinating and as significant of a history, I think, of any of our colonial history, time of great conflict, and one that we would be well to know better and have more in our bones. And we're grateful that William Quigley has made that possible through his remarkable book, Pure Heart. Well, it almost sounds like I'm introducing him, and my task is to introduce the chair of the Diocesan History Committee, who has made this possible and has done great duty these past many years building the diocesan history, including the history of the diocese throughout the Civil War period and the history of enslavement in the Diocese of Pennsylvania and the ongoing project to fill out all of the squares and elements of our history. And William Cutler, of course, not only chair of the Diocesan History Committee, but professor emeritus at Temple of History, and a good friend of the diocese, a good friend of Christ Church. So, Bill, thank you very much, and I'll hand it over to you.
Good afternoon. I'll try to make this brief because we really want to get to Bill Quigley's remarks. Suffice it to say that even though Bill Quigley and I have never laid eyes on each other prior to today, our paths have crossed in many ways because he teaches at Governor's Academy in Byfield, Mass., a school in the independent school group in New England, and I went to such a school. In fact, before he taught at Dummer, he taught at Rivers School, and I remember going to Rivers School on many occasions to seek victory on the football field or on the baseball diamond. Bill Quigley's book, which has been out now 3 years, is a remarkable story of both triumph and tragedy. I'll leave it to him to flesh out the details of that because he is far better prepared to do it than I am. He spent, 15 years perhaps working on this project. A project that began as a seminar paper when he was a student in the Masters of Fine Arts program at Harvard. And at that time, his professor was Drew Faust. Perhaps that name rings a bell with some of you. Drew Faust taught at Penn for many years. And she and her husband, Charlie Rosenberg, moved to Harvard in the 90s when she took over the center at Radcliffe devoted to women's history. She used that as a stepping stone to the presidency of Harvard, a position that she held for a decade, in which she guided the university through some perilous waters. In fact, anyone who proposes or decides to run a major university these days better be prepared for perilous waters. And so might be said the same of the Doerr family. because their life was, especially in the 1850s and the early 1860s, a testimony to the difficulties of navigating perilous waters. It was and is, as I said, both a story of tragedy and triumph, and I would urge you to listen closely because you're going to be informed and educated and entertained. Bill?
First of all, I want to thank Bill for those prefatory remarks, and I wanted to say a little bit about how important the work that his committee is doing for the Archdiocese of Pennsylvania. And I'm going to relay to you a story. I've been teaching for almost 35 years, and something just happened on Friday. That's one of the most poignant experiences I've ever had as a teacher. Classes started at the Governor's Academy a week ago Friday, and in my U.S. history class, I'd been building up to what I was going to talk about with the students and have them talk about on Friday. The theme for this unit is what is history, and students oftentimes come in, they, you know, they're 16, 17 years old, and they believe that history is, well, it's obvious, it's what happened in the past, you know, it's the facts. And by the end of the unit, I hope to make them aware, to a greater awareness and understanding, that it's more complicated than that, and that we don't always agree on what happened in the past, much less what's happening right now in the present. And I had them read from the 1619 Project, which the New York Times is doing. And the mission of that project is to propose that maybe we ought to reframe our understanding of American history by considering that this country was founded when the first African American came against his will and was sold into indentured servitude and essentially bondage because he was treated differently, as far as we can tell, than other indentured servants in Jamestown in 1619. And so this project is proposing to, as other historians are doing recently, look at our history through a different lens, the lens of the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans to realize what makes America, America. I had them read just one essay that I excerpted from the 1619 Project, which was very provocative, and it proposed that American capitalism is a brutal form of capitalism, and that to this day it is essentially so, because it's still formed by attitudes and practices that were rooted in slavery. Very provocative 90-minute discussion. I hardly even had to intervene. At the end of the class, the students filed out, and one student lingered. He's a young, I'm gonna have a hard time even relating this. He's probably 17, he's a junior, African-American boy, tough kid, quite an accomplished wrestler. And he came up to me at the end of class, and he started to try to say how much he appreciated this class by saying, you know, I never thought I'd be sitting in a history class and be moved. And then he just burst into tears and sobbed, as did I. And then we both were reaching for the Kleenex boxes and hugging each other. So this is powerful stuff that you're doing, Bill, right? Looking again at the stories we tell ourselves about our past. They have real consequences. I also want to thank Reverend Safford and Carol Smith and Barbara Hoag of the Preservation Trust and my gracious hosts, Judy and Palmer Hartle, who put me up yesterday and last night. I have to admit that I'm a little afraid that I might not be able to express to you today just how profoundly moved and humbled, I guess is the word, by the opportunity to speak on this hallowed occasion, but I'm going to try. William Shakespeare once wrote, "What's past is prologue." As William Faulkner saw die-hard demons haunting America still in the mid-20th century, he wrote, "The past is never dead, it's not even past." Have you ever wondered how Faulkner would interpret our national condition today? Odessa, Dayton, El Paso, Stoneman Douglas, Sandy Hook, Ferguson, Charlottesville. These place names echo the fratricide of Bull Run, Shiloh, Chancellorsville, Harper's Ferry, Antietam, Fort Pillow. We gather here today to commemorate a great American, the Reverend Benjamin Dalton Dorr, minister of this historic American church during the nation's greatest crisis, America's Civil War. Racial slavery and zealous partisanship caused Americans to war with each other, killing perhaps as many as 300,000 more American soldiers than in all other American wars combined. I wrote a book about Benjamin Dorr. The book is titled Pure Heart, because Dorr is as much a patriotic hero as is William Wallace, the Scottish freedom fighter Mel Gibson portrayed, Braveheart. When I started researching my subject in 2002, I heard then too echoes of the American Civil War in the tribal politics and culture wars of our time. As I delved more deeply into mid-19th century America, those echoes sounded louder and louder during the administrations of George Walker Bush and Barack Hussein Obama. As the Civil War continues to echo ever more ominously, I contend that America's truest ideals in that conflict and still now are enshrined in these monuments, in this church, to Benjamin Dorr, to Esther Oden Dorr, and to their eldest son, Captain William White Dorr. Reverend Safford has already pointed out to you the monument to Captain William White Dorr right there. Just though, up at the head of the right side aisle is a monument to his mother, and at the very head of the left-hand aisle is the monument to Benjamin Dorr. Monuments to the Confederacy and its leaders mock America's true ideals. This pastoral father and his son are true heroes, Union heroes, American heroes. Nearly lost to history, those two men and the monuments to their memory here in Philadelphia ought to remind us of what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. Nevermore in the 150 years since the Reverend Dorr's death have Americans had more need to hearken to his example as we have now. I mean to be provocative to the point that maybe you'll be compelled to buy my book. Truly, though, I mean to be provocative for a serious purpose. The last words in my book ring even more truly today, I think, than they did when I wrote them in 2015. In the discord of our own day, with politics as partisan and waged as meanly as ever before, with religion polarizing our politics, and amid another protracted war whose cause divides Americans, once again we are at a crossroads in America. Well might we identify with Americans so conflicted and sorely tried a century and a half ago. Like them too, we might recognize in the hearts of a Union soldier and his father something of the better angels of our nature that Lincoln had hoped to invoke from the mystic chords of American memory. Now, I don't expect everyone is going to agree with my proposition. In fact, a number of people have challenged it, and I welcome that dialogue. I'm going to speak on this subject for about 45 minutes. I've been invited to do that, after which I welcome your comments and the conversation that this subject might elicit. I stumbled upon this story about 25 years ago. I was in a flooding basement helping to salvage the archives of the Governor's Academy in Byfield, Massachusetts, where I teach, when in one of the large cardboard boxes we were moving to a dry room upstairs, two of my colleagues discovered a collection of letters written by a Civil War soldier to his father. At first, I was just curious. Who was the Union infantry officer who wrote the letters? I had assumed that he was a student at the academy, but I learned that Captain William White Dorr, commissioned as a first lieutenant, was born, raised, and schooled right here in Philadelphia, where in 1837, the year of Will Dorr's birth, his father became the rector of this church, much venerated in the story